the board will conduct a closed session in accordance with the Texas Open Meeting Act, Texas Government Code Chapter 551, Subchapters D and E. Before any closed meeting is convened, the presiding officer will publicly identify the section or sections of the act authorizing the closed meeting. All final votes, actions, or decisions will be taken in the open meeting. The subjects to be discussed or considered upon which any formal action may be taken are as follows. Items do not have to be taken in the same order as shown on the meeting notice. We will call the meeting to order by identifying ourselves, starting with board members to my left, to determine if a quorum is present.
Stephen Moore, present.
Ken Bateman, present.
Wendy Long, present.
John Shinsky, present.
Brandon Keller, present.
Debbie Cantrell, present. We do have a quorum. Ms. Alexander is not with us at this time. I haven't heard anything.
She is definitely
okay.
Attending.
Maybe she's running just a tidbit late. We will now, at 6.03 p.m., go into executive session. It's a tidbit late. It's English.
It's okay.
Tad, if we're a little more European. Thank you, Ms. Long. Executive session is authorized by Government Code Chapter 551, Subchapters D and E. A, private consultation with the board's attorney by telephone conference regarding a matter in which the board... All right. Ms. Alexander has just joined at 6.03:30. I will also read what I need to for a closed session. If during the course of this meeting covered by this notice, the board should determine that a closed meeting or session should be held or is required in relation to any item presented to the board in this agenda, then such closed meeting or session is authorized by Chapter 551, Texas Government Code. The open meetings law will be held by the board at that date, hour, and place given in this notice, as the board may conveniently meet in such closed meeting or session concerning any or all subjects and all purposes permitted by Chapter 551, Texas Government Code of said open meeting law, including the following sections and purposes. A, private consultation with the board's attorney by telephone conference regarding a matter in which the board seeks advice of its attorney regarding pending or contemplated litigation and regarding a matter in which the duty of the attorney to the board under the Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct of the State Bar of Texas clearly conflicts with Chapter 551 of the Texas Government Code, specifically to include Hilltop Floor 551.071. B, pursuant to Section 551.074 of the Texas Government Code, to deliberate the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a public officer or employee, specifically regarding professional employee contracts in Section 551.071 of the Texas Government Code, to conduct a private consultation with its attorney by telephone conference to seek the advice of its attorney on a matter in which the duty of the attorney to the board under the Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct of the State Bar of Texas clearly conflicts with Chapter 551, specifically regarding professional employee contracts, teachers, counselors, librarians, and nurses. C, issues regarding a public school student which may reveal personally identifiable information about the student, 551.0821. As mentioned, at 6.03 p.m., we have been into executive session.
Okay, it is.
Okay. 7.02 p.m., we are reconvening to the open meeting from the executive session. If we would all stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States and the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible. Thank you. We will now take our moment of silence. You may stand or sit, or you may use this time to reflect, pray, meditate, or engage in any silent activity that is not likely to interfere with others. Let us take that moment. Thank you very much. This evening we have several special recognitions, but we are going to do this a little out of order this evening. So we will proceed first to our public forum, policy BED. A maximum of 30 minutes is set aside to allow the public to make comments to the board. People wishing to participate must sign up with a presiding officer or designee before the meeting begins and indicate the topic about which they wish to speak. Individuals are limited to 5 minutes, and delegations of more than five persons shall appoint one person to present their views before the board. Complaints and concerns for which other resolution channels are provided shall be directed through those channels before bringing the matter to the board. If information is presented which causes the board to consider the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a public officer or employee, or to hear complaints or charges against the public officer or employee, the board may recess the closed session in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 551.074 Texas Government Code. We do have two presenters this evening, both of which would like to discuss Gaxwell's. We will start with Jennifer Cole.
Members of the school board, I'm here tonight to speak to you about items that will be voted on tomorrow evening at the Argyle Town Council meeting that will certainly have an impact on the district and more specifically the intermediate school campus. At tomorrow's meeting, Hillwood Oil and Gas is requesting three special use permits, also known as SUPs, to allow gas well drilling and production, and two of these sites are adjacent to where we are sitting tonight. The Hillwood Whitehead unit is west of 377 and south of Old Justin. The access road to this pad will be off Old Justin Road and aligned with Front Street. As you are aware, this is also one of the two entrances to this campus and certainly is not an ideal traffic situation as it is. The Hillwood Jenkins unit is adjoining to the west of the school property behind the playground. While I certainly understand and support the district's desire to lease their minerals and receive royalties on these minerals, the safety of our students must come first. I know that the middle school high school campus is part of a pooling unit to which the district has already and will receive more additional funds, but I believe that pad site is far enough from the campus that I don't think the safety of those students is ever put at risk. But I do not believe that to be the fact on these two new units, particularly the Whitehead unit, which is being voted on tomorrow. Below are some questions that I have and would like to have answered before the school district supports the town's approval of these SUP requests. Number one, how many trucks will be entering and exiting this site during each stage of production? Number two, during the fracking process of the well, how will the noise and vibrations be handled so that the educational process is not hindered? Number three, Hillwood states that the drilling operations will be contracted out to other companies. Are background checks being done on their employees, Hillwoods and otherwise, that will be both living and working at this site? Number four, although Hillwood states that it will only flare a well when it is necessary, which we know is very dangerous, what are the restrictions, if any, that will be put on the flaring of the possible 36 wells that will be near the school? Number five, although the town of Argyle does not require on-site vapor recovery systems or on-site monitoring, has the district asked Hillwood for independent monitors to ensure the air quality around the school maintains acceptable levels? Number six, since part of the Whitehead site is in floodplain, what is being done to make sure that there is not any toxic runoff that could potentially find its way to the campus or the creek running through the property? Has a hydrology study been completed? Number seven, should there be some type of accident, how will the school handle an evacuation, especially if one of our evacuation routes, Front Street, is inaccessible? Number eight, does the district know if any pipelines are being proposed on this property? Number nine, does the district plan to do any baseline testing prior to the drilling of these wells? As I'm sure you are all aware, drilling has become more urban than rural, and there are many aspects that have come under scrutiny. There's hardly a day goes by that you can't read about some of these issues or see them on your nightly news. Last week, there were three separate incidents right here in the Metroplex. There was a chemical spill in flour mounds where 80 barrels of flowback was spilled at a Williams site. It was reported in the Star-Telegram that a sudden and unexpected spill leak on the fracking tank caused the spill. There was also gas tanks that exploded in Decatur, the same storage tanks that will be on these two sites near the school. WFAA reported that four tanks were on fire, the blaze at one point spread from tanker to tanker, and a fifth storage tank was blown well away from the site. In the Denton Record Chronicle on Friday, it says tests at wells in Denton showed elevated levels of toxins. Independent air quality tests around Razor Ranch gas well showed elevated levels of benzene and other harmful chemicals during several stages of the drilling process. Again, these three incidences were just from the last week. When individuals make decisions to sign leases or allow drilling on their property, they do their research and then they make a decision as to whether or not the benefit outweighs the risk. With the two wells near this school, the parents were not given a choice or told about their concerns. As our representative, I'm assuming that you as the board made those decisions for us. And while I certainly believe that you have our children's safety as your top priority, do you feel comfortable that you have all the answers to the questions that I have posed? Have you studied the site map and attended the meetings where these sites were being discussed? Do you know that there will be potentially 36 wells to be serviced that will have trucks going in and out for years? Have you asked for an alternate path site or a different entrance or exit from the Whitehead unit? The Planning and Zoning Committee only passed this unit with a 4-2 vote. With just one more vote against it, this item would not have passed. They had concerns as well. Most of the discussion was centered around traffic concerns, but not only on Old Justin, but 377 as well. As a parent with a child at this campus, at the least I would like to have seen this item put on an agenda and discussed by the school board prior to the town council meeting. Since that has not been the case, my desire would be to have the district ask the town council to table these SUPs until you as a board have had a chance to discuss these issues at a public meeting and have all the questions answered. I hope to see and hear from you tomorrow night at the town council meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker will be Jamie Seidla. Please do.
Pass around. I'll find it easiest.
We appreciate it. Before your 5 minutes hasn't started, by the way. I personally, and I know the board would. You know, miraculously, my pen, of course, went out of ink on about number 3 through 5. If you could supply Tammy with your list, if that would be possible, then perhaps we would make copies and make sure board members had that. But not at this time, but
okay.
Thank you. Okay, sorry.
Okay. No problem. All right, well, I'm just going to talk a little bit more about what Jennifer had spoke to you about. So thank you, first of all, for allowing me the opportunity to address each one of you tonight. I want to start by saying, Will Durant, a great writer and philosopher, said, education is a progressive discovery of our own ignorance, meaning the more we know is to realize the more we don't know. It is sometimes more difficult to get educated on a subject as we make excuses of how busy our lives can get and get in the way of that. I certainly understand that. It would be easy to ignore the issues arising daily with the oil and gas industry. However, when the big term monster is in the room, you can turn away, but you can still smell it. So at some point, the issues need to be addressed in order to clean the air. I stand before you as a concerned citizen and a parent of a child at the intermediate school. I drive in and out of the school daily for drop-off and pick-up. I want to address a number of concerns I have with the proposed location of the Whitehead Well. However, with respect to time, I will focus on one, and that's the traffic. Hillwood has gone before P&Z and will go before the City Council tomorrow night in hopes of approving the SUPs for the Whitehead and Jenkins Well sites. Hillwood plans on putting in a gravel road that will run parallel to the railroad track. The entrance and exit to this well will line up with Front Street at Old Justin Road. If you have driven through this intersection in the morning or afternoon, you understand the traffic issues that can occur. This will be greatly complicated by the amount of trucks that will come with the production of this well. You see, this is not just one well bore, but up to 24. So with using the numbers that Hillwood provided at the P&Z meeting, the construction and drilling of this site will take the next 2.5 to 3.5 years to complete. To give you an example, take a look at the Blessing Well located on Wayne Holt's property just on the south side of 407. That rig went up in October and is still up today, 5 months later. They are only drilling 7 well bores at that site. After construction and drilling of the Whitehead Well, the normal daily operation will take place for the life of the well. That could be the next 20 or 30 years, and they will need to empty the tanks once or twice a day. If you look at the handouts that I sent, it gives you some references to how many trucks that is. With the time frame in mind, you have to look at the amount of trucks that will be added to this intersection and at what stage. Please look at the handout. When you look at these numbers, it's not hard to see that this area, including 377, could become very dangerous. It has been recommended by PNC to restrict truck access to the site on school days from 7 to 8:30 a.m. and from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. I would hope that you, the board, would ask that Hillwood not bring any trucks in or out during that time. Old Justin Road is not wide enough for passing with tanker trucks or trucks with trailers present. With the increase of truck traffic compensated further by train, I would also suggest that the school board urge Hillwood to consider Harpole Road as an alternate route. So here's what you can do. As many believe, when you sign a lease agreement with a gas operator, this is the only negotiating opportunity you are allowed. However, now that you have a monetary agreement with the and you have actually joined in a partnership with the gas operator, the school district has the ability to ask questions and make recommendations to Hillwood and to the town council. I ask that you immediately act on this. If you have concerns or questions about any issue brought before you tonight, or any issue that affects the health and safety of families that travel through this area, you need to ask the town council to table or deny the SUP for the Whitehead well site until all affected parties have had time to properly address the issue. Please ask the town council to table the vote until the school board has had an opportunity to discuss the issues at a public meeting and have all questions answered. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you both very, very much. We appreciate it. That concludes our public forum this evening. We will now move, and I know we have several participants, which we're very happy to have, a special recognition of staff and students. This is time that we set aside to recognize students, staff, or citizens who have achieved honor or awards, received notable recognition, or contributed to the benefit of the district and or the community. As you got your agenda, there were six listings, but Hilltop grade 5 UIL teams have asked us to postpone to next month, as well as Elizabeth Kleppinger concerning the Texas Art Education Association's Art of the Month Capital Exhibit. We've been asked to postpone that to next month. So we have the honor this evening of having our boys and girls varsity basketball with us, our girls bowling team, our wrestling teams, and swimming teams.
Open the door and let them in.
And I'll let Dr. Wright.
We'll start with boys basketball. Appreciate you gentlemen coming tonight and meeting with our school board and receiving recognition for the great basketball season that you had this year. We're very proud of your accomplishments. We're very proud of you, Coach King, and of our assistant coaches. You want to tell the board a little bit about the season, how far they went? And
sure.
Okay.
First of all, thank you for having us and recognizing us this evening. We appreciate that. For the fourth year in a row, we won 25 games, which we're very proud of. We made it to the third round of playoffs, recent quarterfinals, before we lost to Carrollton Ranch U in a very good game. Most of you were probably there. It was a great game. The most exciting thing about these guys is twofold. Number one, we graduated all but two kids off of last year's team. And so we really kind of felt like this was a rebuilding year. And in a lot of aspects, it was a rebuilding year, but to win 25 games in a rebuilding year is a really an accomplishment for these young men. We're very proud of that. The other thing we're very, very happy about is that 9 of our 10 young men will be returning next year. So we're very excited about the prospects for our upcoming season. We had 10 gentlemen. We had one senior, Murphy Ellis, and then we had 9 underclassmen on the team. So, again, very excited about the future for the boys basketball team.
Thank you, Coach King. Connor York. Congratulations. Mason Lee. Mark. Taylor Ish. Wes King. Congratulations. Andrew Rish. Congratulations. Doug Fryer. Patrick Rish.
Justin Thomas, and Murphy Ellis. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for having us.
And Kurt Schmidt has brought the seniors here tonight. Thank you, ladies, for being here with us tonight. Did you bring more than the seniors?
Yeah.
Okay. Kurt Schmidt's going to tell you a little bit about the season and how that went, and then we have some recognition to give it to the seniors.
Thank you all for having us tonight. I've invited my four seniors especially. We have a couple other players came along with us too. We have four seniors, like I said, and a little bit different story than what Coach King is talking about. We're going to be losing the big part of our team from this year, and we have a lot of work to do for next year, but we're excited for that challenge. This year was not easy. We had a tough pre-district season, and but the seniors, co-captains, all four of them were co-captains, and they provided great leadership, and they helped the girls stick through the tough times, and we enjoyed some good times, and we got to district, and we won our fifth straight district championship, 10-0, and went into the playoffs, and had a really tough matchup, just the way the bracket falls sometimes. We ended up losing to Kennedale, who lost in the last 2 seconds in the regional finals to the team that went on to win the state. Doesn't make us feel much better, but we do know we didn't lose to a slouch or anything like that. And the four seniors, especially, like I said, the leadership they provided this year, while times were tough especially, was just, they're going to be irreplaceable. But I'm still excited about the girls coming back, and we hope to make it a sixth straight district championship and win a few more playoff games. These four here have been a part of just numerous victories and championships and a lot of fun playoff games. We've had some good times together, and it's going to be tough to see them leave. Real proud of what they've accomplished over their 4 years. Brittany's been with us for three, and then the other four have been here as long as I have. And so they were all part of a whole lot of varsity girls basketball victories. To end the season, we've had some awards announced. The district named Colby Harris, our district MVP, and she was also named to the TABC All-Region team and the TGCA All-State team, and also she's a part of our academic All-District team. All four seniors, you want to give her the, her certificate? Seniors were named to the first team All-District team in one form or fashion. Katie Eckert was named our Defensive Player of the Year for the district. Claire Pettibon was named to the TABC All-Region team, and she was also a first team All-District selection and named to the Academic All-District team. And Brittany O'Brien, coming back from a tough injury last year, came up with a really big season, and she was named to the first team for our All-District team this year. Hey, hanging out with us today, a couple other Harris girls. Paisley Harris is a sophomore, and Allie Harris is a freshman this year.
We're very proud of the season that you girls had. We're very proud of all of you. We're very proud of you, Coach Smith, and your assistant coaches. We thank you so much for coming tonight and sharing your great season with us.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Lane.
Bottling thing. Okay. Laura Young works with this team. You want to tell the board a little bit about the bowling team, and then we have some certificates tomorrow.
Okay. 4 years ago, Mr. Bass approached me about sponsoring bowling. I was raised in a bowling alley. This is my fourth year, first year to take a team. Every year that we have bowled, I've actually taken singles to state. I have two singles going to state this year as well as the girls team meets. One regionals, we went district, 16-2. We went regionals, undefeated. And my two singles played 6th and 7th, and we're headed to San Antonio on Friday for state.
Ooh. All right.
Blessed with two coaches. I have Mike Whitness and Joseph Haynes, who is actually bowling in Reno for Nationals today, so he's not with us, who have worked tremendous with both my boys and my girls. I did have a boy that qualified for regionals that did not qualify for state this year, which was my son. But I am very, very proud of these girls. We have really had a road for them to be. I only have 5 girls on a team, and that's what it takes to get there. So. Really well. Very proud of them.
Heather Arnold?
Yes.
Thank you. Congratulations,
Heather.
Dakota
Adu?
Daniel Jones?
Here she's
taking
color guard
practice. Jennifer Opal? Congratulations, Jennifer. And Cheyenne Nguyen? We're very proud of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The referee team,
Fisher. You guys want to come up and form like a couple of lines here? Spread out maybe a little bit more. There you go. Coach Fisher is going to bring us up to date on everything you did this season, and then I have some certificates for you. We certainly appreciate you all being here tonight.
Thank you for having us. It's you know, it's good to get recognition for these guys. They deserve it. I recognize them every day because I get to see them all the time, you know, and it's really nice when the whole bunch can get together and then ever get to brag about them to some of the other people. I had a great season this year. The hardest working bunch that I've ever had in all my years of coaching at any school. Pleasure to be around. These guys, you know, we kept our string alive at winning seasons at home. Dual records, and we got to district tournament. We had some unfortunate incidents at a technical disqualification, we had a concussion, we had all kinds of things that just didn't go our way at the district tournament, but here's the thing is, he's the only one not going to be here next year, so the rest of them will be, and I'm going to miss him, I'm going to miss Colton, but so we got good things to look forward to, and appreciate you guys being here for us, and I appreciate these guys as much as I can do.
Matt Temple?
Matt's not here.
Clark Lanning? Cutler McMartin. Nick Gonzalez. Congratulations. Chris Louie.
Chris just got here from golf today and they got second place in the golf.
All right. Fantastic. Trip Sanders. Congratulations. Colin Hastings. Sam Davidson. Nick Christopher. Congratulations. John Flores. Billy Sheehan. Colton Hagler.
Colton was one of our captains this year, along with Nick, along with Dylan back here. So if we're captain, we got 2 of them coming back next year.
Congratulations. Wade Frazier, Dylan Taylor, James Blake, Chip Wright. Brian Felton. Jeremy Hopkins.
Hey, Coach.
Yes.
Can you share with the board just about our district and just how our wrestling?
Sure. I always, when I talk about it, I want to make sure that everybody understands that you know, in Texas wrestling, there's not any classifications. It's open class. So our district is Louisville High School, Marcus High School, Flower Mound High School, the Colony High School, Hebron High School, and Northwest High School, and now we're going to get Byron Nelson in our district next year when they'll have seniors, I think, next year. So it's a tough district, you know. It's one of the toughest districts in the state, not just in the area. And, you know, I'm always proud of these guys. They always start out asking, you know, where's our guy? Who's our guy, you know? And what side of school are you guys in? And we tell them, you know, so these guys represent for the numbers we have versus the numbers against whom we compete. These guys, they make me proud, and you should be proud of them, too. They do a great job. Thanks.
Thanks.
Talk
guys.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for sharing your evening with us. We appreciate it. Thanks, Coach Fisher. And Coach Mauser is swimming.
Thank you for having us this evening. We had three swimmers this year on the swim team. I'll start with the girls. We had Anna Roer, who had a prior engagement tonight. In fact, I think she's at practice, correct? I think she's at swim practice tonight. Anna competed in the 100 breaststroke and the 100 butterfly, making it to state in the 100 breaststroke. Kimmy Phillips, who competed in the 100 backstroke and 200 freestyle, competing in both of those at the state level, was fourth place in the 200 freestyle, but was your district champion and regional champion, but again, making it all the way to state. And then Jason Egan was our lone boy, competing in the 100 freestyle, right, Jason? And the 100 back, and competing in those at district, and just a freshman, so we have high hopes for him for the next 3 years. So, thank you.
Kind of where we are with swimming as far as that they have to furnish their own pool and that kind of thing?
Correct. Basically, the way it works is they have essentially swim clubs that they go and swim with either in the mornings or in the evenings. It depends on their particular club. Jason's out of Denton, I believe, correct?
Shooting house with Wild LSC.
Right. So they switch on me sometimes. Last year, I can't remember where they were, and then y'all went to Grapevine,
Southwood,
Carroll.
Yeah, we were at Grapevine last year, now we're at Grapevine.
So they switch all men. Sometimes I just hear secondhand. But they have their own swim club. They have their own swim practices. Basically, we take them to a couple of meets. Jason's mom took him to a couple of meets as a swim sponsor. And then I took him for district, regionals, and state. So we're in a district that changes every year. We're typically in with the Colony, the Wichita Falls schools, the Denton schools, although Denton, Ryan, Denton Guyer will be moving out of our district, so I'm not sure how that will affect us. And then we're in a region with Highland Park, Aledo, some of your larger 4A schools here in the area. So they compete against them when we go to regionals and state. Of course, state's everybody, but. And the state is, in order to make it to state, you either have to win your regional finals or you have to be in the top the next top 8 times. So to make it to state, you have to be one of the top 16 times for your particular event in the state of Texas.
Thank you, Coach Brown. Well, thank you both for coming this evening. We appreciate it.
Always nice to be surrounded by so much talent, right? That was great. And again, we will be recognizing next month our Hilltop Grade 5 UIL teams and Elizabeth Clevenger. So we will do that next month as requested. Okay, if we could move on to the consent agenda items. We have the minutes for February 15, 2010 is presented on page 56 of our board packet. Our general operating checks and financial reports as presented on page 61, and our donations as presented on page 88. Let me go ahead and read those. Baseball parents purchased and donated a baseball tarp to the school district for use on our field. The value is $3,037. Two, the parents of the varsity baseball team donated $4,828 for an out-of-town tournament. Those were our donations.
Yes. I'd like to make a motion to approve set items as presented in the board packet.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander. Thank you, Mr. McKellar. We have our motion and our second. Further questions, concerns, clarifications? No? We will go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimously accepted by the board. We will now move into our report section, which first will go to Ms. Alexander concerning our Argyle Education Foundation liaison report.
The Black Diamond Affair was an outstanding event. The VDA net was more than previous years, and the Argyle Education Foundation raised $75,000 that evening to be dedicated to the funding of the kindergarten through 12th science program. So that $75,000 will go towards the science programs for Argyle. Also, the Education Foundation, they sponsor the Golden Eagle Award. And if you're not, it is where you nominate a teacher to them. And at the end of the year, we have each teacher from each campus. One teacher from each campus, and then there's a one teacher is for the teacher, the best teacher all over everybody. Mary Stein is the person in contact with the Education Foundation. If you want a nominating form, you can find that on the Education Foundation's website, and or you can contact me, and I can. Get something to you. The deadline is Friday, April 9th, by 5 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Wright, we're going to hear from you on the various miscellaneous things.
This is a big season for state assessment for the district, tax, tax M, tax I, tax alt. We are waiting on results for the exit retest to see if we still have any seniors who have not passed everything. So that should be coming within just a few days. There's a new readiness program that takes into account not just the 10th grade PSAT and not just the SAT, but an 8th grade readiness test that's free this year for the district. And we're going to be planning to administer that to our 8th graders, and then to the 10th grade, the PSAT the district's been paying for, we are supposed to be able to get it free this year. That would be October of 10. And then every student gets a free SAT. This is through the state funding, so we should be able to take advantage of that, or our students should be able to take advantage of that. The one-act play is being hosted in Argyle this year at the district level, and Mrs. Chumley's group will perform on Wednesday about 3 o'clock. So if any of you have an opportunity, you can actually go and watch. You just can't go in once they start, but you can go and be in the audience if you choose to do that. You saw all of the winter athletics that were presented tonight. We're now in the midst of basketball, softball. We haven't recognized soccer yet, but we will be doing that, and then our track season is in front of us also. And then Paul's next with his... Paul has some things to say about the finances.
I just wanted to give you an update on where we are the first part of the first 6 months of the budget year. You know, we had originally budgeted a surplus of a little over $320,000. And it's going to be, right now, it looks like at least a little over twice that because it's mainly in our state aid, which is a result of our enrollment and our average daily attendance being higher than what we originally budgeted at the beginning of the year. There's two things that are caused by that that helps our state aid number. First of all, we just get more money for having more students enrolled, and then also the mid-size adjustment that we're getting this first time as a result of new legislation for Chapter 41 districts is also compounding that extra money in that calculation. So we're basically now projecting our state aid to be about $375,000 more than what we originally budgeted. So on that summary page I had given you in your packet, we're looking at right now estimating our on the expenditure side, our expenditures have been running pretty close to normal. So unless we have some catastrophe the last half of the year, maintenance-wise or something like that, I'm right now thinking we'll be closer to $700,000 for the year in our surplus. Also, some other things that are causing that. Well, first of all, an informational piece I put in there was the $325,000 we budgeted this year for the capital improvement items. I gave you a list and totaled out what exactly we spent so far in that area. We spent $12,692 on high school gym doors, exit devices, having those automated where they lock like at the other entrance. We have the transportation. We moved the fence and gates behind the transportation parking lot. We spent $4,960 there. Cabling and wiring for the computer lab, $7,453. $6,500 for a gator for the maintenance department. Not an animal, but a equipment vehicle. $65,000 for band uniforms. Almost $10,000 for a commercial washer and dryer to replace the old one in the high school gym that they used to wash uniforms that was worn out there. A maintenance department tractor for $15,312. The band marimbas for $29,400. The band percussion battery that we just purchased, which is $18,820. And the new door key system at the high school, we spent almost $8,000 on that. So the total we spent to date is $178,507 so far of that $325,000. So we have $146,000 left in that line item that we have spent for this budget year. So. Something I wanted to point out to you with the utilities so far that we're very pleased with. You remember we cut a lot of money out of our utility budget for this year, what we spent the previous year, and some changes in scheduling at Hilltop, the boiler and the units running all the time over there, and also getting one of our hallway section at the high school, getting it on an automated system that we just did around this time last year. We're seeing some really big savings on our utilities there, and they're running pretty close to what we budgeted at the first of the year. So, for example, our high school, middle school, our electric usage, comparing the first 5 months of last year, we spent $154,000 last year, and for this same time period, and we're at $128,000 this year, so that's like almost $26,000 less. At Hilltop, is another big example. Last year at this time, we had spent $93,000, and we spent $54,000 this year at Hilltop, so we saved about $38,000 there so far. And another big thing was our water usage. We've fixed some leaks and some sprinkler heads that were busted and things there. And our water usage district-wide is, let's see here. We had this year, year-to-date, last year, spent $59,000 district-wide on water, and we spent $39,000. We saved almost $20,000 on water so far during the same time period. So we're very happy that we've been able to reduce our utilities there in our budget.
We're very happy, too.
So that's where we are up to date for this year, and next month we'll be showing you where the new positions that were approved and what we've added, what that will add to our budget for next year, and we'll also look at some possible scenarios for staff increases and show you what that will look like with our budget for next year.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We are now going to hear from Coach Todd Rogers, our athletic director, and Dr. Wright on the five-year athletic plan.
Okay. We've had a chance to review this. Coach Rogers has worked diligently on this. Coach Smith also worked on it. And then I reviewed it and made recommendations. So Coach Rogers needs to...
Page one, starting on page 106.
Tell you kind of what he's put together here.
Can you go through those items up there?
However you wish to.
Hey, however you want to do it. Mm-hmm. Y'all can read.
Okay.
All right. Number one, I'll just go through some of the items and preparations that I thought would see fit for our athletic program over the next 4 to 5 years. At the basketball coach's office, we had a tour through all our facilities, and we felt like that was some of our greatest needs was the basketball facilities. They've been here the longest, and so we thought we would get those up to speed. One of the other concerns was adequate storage space in the middle school gym. We have some volleyball standards and some unprotected equipment out there that we'd like to secure for storage, and we've discussed with a couple of construction people about how to go in there and do that. And thirdly, we're currently using padlocks with a lock system that was designed before I got here. Is used a padlock system in the build house, and we want to go to a spin dial that's on the locker, has three different combinations on it. The locks over a period of time really don't survive hitting the wall occasionally. And so, and they become projectiles occasionally. So we want to, they don't get lost, they don't get thrown in the trash, don't get anything. We can just keep all that stuff on the lockers. And so we requested that we be able to add the locks to those lockers. And then they have three different combinations on there. So that would help with security in the locker rooms. And it also help with the cost would be beneficial over a period of time to have those kind of locks put in. Second thing is to reinstate and recharacterize the girls' coaching position lost in the spring of 2009. This would allow for the high school to have a head boys and head girls soccer coach. This would also give us an additional fall assistant coach for volleyball to help with the transition to girls' basketball. What I mean by that is the way the assistants are set up now in the high school is that the two volleyball assistants, minus Coach Overly, migrate to girls' basketball. And that leaves Coach Schmidt, when the girls make the playoffs all the time in volleyball, that leaves it all with Coach Schmidt until those girls finish their volleyball season. So if we can add that additional coach right there with the addition of the girls' soccer coach, that would help with one transition coach to help basketball get started. There's usually, it's been my experience, it's been a 2 or 3 week layover on that. Number three, hire middle school only girls' coach to fill Mandy Pell's position. And coach three middle school sports. Middle school coach only coach is desperately needed in the girls' coaching staff. This is currently posted as described. what we're doing with Mandy Pell's position. She was filling the tennis spot. She was not coaching anything in the fall except tennis and working the tennis kids through that system, through there. We focus all of our tennis now in the spring, but we're able to play some contests in the fall. And then she was coaching girls basketball. If we had a girls only position, it would be best serve all three sports, which would be volleyball, basketball, and track at that time. And then the next one is number four, is hire a full-time tennis coach so we can have all the tennis kids' needs met year-round. And it would also give us an opportunity if we had a full-time tennis coach to have some middle school tennis after school only at that level.
I just wanted to throw in here that prior to Coach Pell's being the tennis coach, we did have a tennis coach who was football, middle school football, and tennis. So
it was actually middle school football, middle school basketball, and then tennis.
So this would be going back to that point in time. I mean, Mandy picked up two different coaching assignments.
Yes, yes. Middle school football position was designed such that he got finished about 4:30 or 5, and then he had tennis after that. So we were still trying to meet their needs at that point, too.
So 2 years ago, we had more coaches for middle school girls and tennis than we do now.
That's correct. That's correct. In reference to the two-campus plan, four additional male coaches and two additional female coaches will need to be hired as our high school and middle school enrollments begin to increase and we near the day of separate campuses. The separate campus plan, which is in this packet, calls for 5 male middle school coaches, 4 female middle school coaches to be solely responsible for their lone campus with no high school duties or responsibilities. This will increase the efficiency in the classroom as well in the athletic room.
Someone just
needs some water to talk.
I don't know. Guess I haven't talked this much in a long time. In reference to high school middle school enrollment growth, which would be number 6, our middle school coaches serving as high school assistants will need to cease for best efficiency. The coaches could either be moved to the high school or relegated to all middle school. That's whatever our preference would be. Based on 09, 10 assignments, 3 additional male coaches, which was Pitts, Price, and Dodson, and 1 female middle school coach, which is Coonrod, must be added prior to the high school enrollment reaching 800 students. With the exception of Coonrod, who is the head softball, all these coaches will have 3 sports throughout the year. Any explanations about that? Pitts, Price, and Dodson, if you'll notice on one of my sheets, all coach high school sports at one point during the school year. Mm-hmm. So it would be simply dividing those gentlemen. Ms. Coonrod would have to come to the high school because she's already the high school coach, so we'd be able to plug her in into a fall sport. And number 7, in reference to the two-campus plan, Harp, Coonrod, and Bell will need to move from the middle school to the high school campus, and Roller will need to move from the intermediate to the middle school campus. Now, I know some of those names are redundant, but simply it's just a depiction that those people need to get off those campuses, and it's my opinion that they need to teach on their campus where they're coaching. In reference to number 8, cut sports, what I mean by cut sports is when our populations get bigger than our teams, that we'll have to cut athletes from those. That would be volleyball, basketball, soccer, wrestling, baseball, softball, golf, and tennis. These sports have set participation levels over the next 5 years, and we will see little change in their staffing needs. So, any questions about that? Since they have set participation numbers, the non-cut sports such as football, cross country, and track will need the greatest staffing adjustments because their numbers are not set, and they will grow as enrollment grows. Now, I if you look at that, I mean, I'm predicting. This is a prediction. I'm predicting that participation will stay at the level it is right now as our numbers increase. I'm realistic enough to know that more clubs will come around, more opportunities for kids to do other stuff, that those participation numbers may steadily decrease, but we still have teams that we could add to. So, I mean, there's a counterbalance right there that I'm not real sure exactly how that will play out. Number 10, As enrollment increases, additional teams will also be needed. First, we will reactivate ninth grade baseball and JV softball teams as soon as the numbers dictate. As far as adding teams, ninth grade B team football will be the easiest because it would practice and play alongside the ninth grade A team. The addition of other teams like JV soccer, ninth grade B team basketball, ninth grade B team volleyball will require more coaches and will be considered when enrollment reaches 800 students. Number 11, as we move to 4A, the basketball and volleyball coaches may need full-time top assistants to assist with single sport players, which will naturally occur as our enrollment grows. The off-season demands of these sports will increase as enrollment grows, therefore an additional coach may be needed full-time. Our staff is currently arranged in this manner, but the additional coach must coach another sport after school. My example is Jason Tucker, Mark Cope. Those two coaches coach their sport during the period, during the regular athletic period during the day, but after school they are football coaches. So Mark coaches soccer during the period, football after school. Jason Tucker coaches basketball during the period, and then he coaches basketball or football after school. So those people need me to be shifted permanently. Number 12, swimming. Qualified swim coach will need to be hired to promote swimming at some point. Pool rental and or have our own auditorium will be decisions that need to be made as numbers dictate. I believe if you'll look on there, my recommendation was as we move well into 4A and even 5A numbers as they are right now. Number 13, the golf coach needs to be straight golf as well. This will allow fall and spring golf for boys and girls. This will be the best for programs to advance the sport. In 14, an additional trainer will be needed when we reach 1,000 students. Training demands increased greatly when we added soccer, and will only worsen when we add JV soccer and other freshman B teams. Our enrollment will be such that one trainer will not be able to care for all the athletes participating in all the sports and cover the multiple events during the winter and spring sports. I had a conversation about this the other day. As our numbers increase, it's not simply covering the events. We have money budgeted in our account to cover the events. It's the number of athletes that will be seeing the trainer during the athletic period for regular everyday care is what we're trying to cover.
Or before school or after.
Or before school. So it's those kind of needs that will only increase as our numbers increase. As far as events, we're overload on the events right now.
So is 1,000 a realistic number? Or does that need to be dropped back down to look for an additional trainer before we get to that?
It's a philosophy that this board wishes to adopt. Right now, he is having to cover middle school football games, and that's the only middle school games that he's covering. That was not the design of the trainer when we initially hired a trainer, was not to cover middle school games. We're currently not covering middle school basketball games in any capacity. So that would be, if we had a middle school track meet, I would make him cover a middle school track meet, but he does not travel with any of those teams as well.
So he could be covering 1,000 students.
He is
only middle school kids.
Based on our numbers right now, he is basically meeting the needs of 1,000 students because we do not turn middle school students away from everyday care.
Well,
it's just simply the covering of events.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but even though his physical presence may not be at these events, I mean, unless he's out of town or having a baby or the whole family's down with the flu, he's available by phone. I don't think we've quite gotten him a beeper yet, although
nobody,
Jeff and I are more than happy to let him borrow ours.
But he does cover. So the answer to your question is we're at that point right now. 1,000 students is the point.
High school students,
right.
Right.
At the point.
I'm going to middle school to have
training. Well, that's a true statement. But if you go to an athletic contest, if anybody in our district and it's a middle school contest, it's highly likely they will have a contract trainer coming to the event. Not all camps. Not all times. But.
And sometimes we do.
It's quite popular.
We have George come, but.
We contract with Presbyterian Hospital, and sometimes when we have multiple events, we make a decision constantly before time to have trainers cover those events.
And the student trainer program has become very not only popular but very well recognized, and also to the
point that that's actually a profession that that can be used on their resume. It's not quite a technical class.
Any questions about any of this? Lots of information in there.
Was it really, do we need a little bit more? I mean, is there any way, I know with those kind of numbers and covering those many campuses, it's really hard, but as far as equipment needs per?
I tried to go through them.
Right. I guess my question is more, you think that's pretty, right now, accurate, or?
I tried, and we looked at it.
I have a question about that, because I did have some questions when I saw it. Like equipment, I mean, we spent $97,000 or $80-something thousand or $67,000 on band uniforms. How do we buy athletic uniforms, Coach? You guys have to
buy them out of the line item budget. And then I have one budget line item that's uniforms and equipment. In other words, I have the regular yearly supplies line item budget, and then I have a budgeted materials for uniforms and equipment.
Well, and I only ask this,
but that's coming from.
Don't you buy new uniforms for each sport every other year?
Most likely.
And then they get passed down.
Yes.
To the uniforms that are taken out of varsity service get passed down.
So middle school sports.
Most of the time, that uniform is not fit.
Oh, right. A lot of times it doesn't fit the middle school students, so that's what I'm asking. Do they buy new for middle school
students? Yes, and there's a replacement
schedule
in there.
That's what I was curious about.
There's a whole uniform replacement schedule that's in your packet, but I think it is.
I was thinking more in terms of the, say, volleyball, that when the varsity gets new uniforms, the JV gets the old.
Yes.
Or softball.
Yes.
Coach Rogers, I had a question. Okay. And by the way, great graphs and stuff, nice easy read. For the equipment, for myself as a board member, looking down for purchasing, if you look down and you put down that would need it this year, tennis netting.
Give us a page, Brenda, if you could.
Well, they're all in
one
the...
110.
They're all amongst the athletic...
No, right.
And I just...
There's equipment budget comparison itself.
And you have the date when you needed them?
Yes.
Well, on the ones that had the date of 2010 and 2011,
yes.
Was the tennis netting, the gym machine, the soccer shelters, and the software for the football?
Yes.
Is that going to be coming down the pipe soon? So
yes.
I should keep that in my mind.
Yes.
For budget, for spending.
Some of those things can be purchased in the fall of 2010. Some of them will be purchased this late spring 2010. That was my rationale for those replacement dates that were running out of life cycle. It's a comparison to the useful life years over to the right.
So it could potentially be spread over two budgetary years.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's just like our volleyball budget per se and our football budget. My football budget, I do buy some items in the fall for my football budget, but it's very few items. It's for the upcoming year, just like volleyball, just like cross country.
So I may miss this, but where are we at with student athletes total, and then when do you think we're going to be at the 1,000?
We're good. It's all right.
I'm sure this is what you meant. It's not 1,000 athletes. It's 1,000 enrollment to high school.
Right. Well, and so
we're at 611 right now.
Okay.
And we're projecting no less than 660.
We'll be about 660 next year.
No less than that.
Right.
Even more likely 665.
And you're out of that number currently at the high school, the estimation of participation percentage level?
Boys are about 60 and girls are about 50.
Okay.
Just ballpark.
And
he has
as best you can over the next 5 years, do you think that will, we know growth hopefully will increase, but do you feel the percentages per that capita will be the same, or do you?
I think the trend would stay that it would stay the same. We have extremely high participation in the middle school.
That's on page 113.
Correct.
I think we're able to expand in the right areas between. Even if we hit to a point, there may be some dead air, for sake of another word, between 700 and 800. Mm-hmm. But when we begin to add B teams, but we don't have full teams in other sports. I mean, it may not be exactly like someone wishes to follow their athletic career, but there's an opportunity for them, especially with the non-cut sports. I mean, it's just like our cross country. Our cross country program has grown exponentially in the last 2 to 3 years. There's some real opportunities for kids to run on some very high-performing teams.
Do we have any other questions for Coach Rogers or Dr. Wright?
Well, I just was hoping to see something a little more detailed to make sure that all of the, if you need more, that we understand why you need more. That's the point.
And I respect that. I'm in pretty good shape. What I tried to depict on here was what I thought I was needing was big ticket items that you have a heads up that's coming down the pike. Regular annual purchases like uniforms, I thought was a regular, I'm going to spend this much this year, I'm going to spend the same amount this year, but football's not getting it this year, girls basketball is.
So here's one of my questions. How much is our, I mean, I know from my experience, I've done a few fundraisers myself that I've seen for uniform purposes or things that certain programs want.
Right.
So my curiosity is, if everybody's having to do a fundraiser to get an additional uniform.
You have to know the history of the sport and the history of what I purchased for that sport.
Right.
I mean, you would have to know all that. So if you're alluding to softball this year.
No, there's a lot of it. I mean.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you know, I know we did volleyball camps, for example, for them to have different or additional equipment.
It's needing more. It's needing more.
Okay.
Okay, so as a board, would you say, maybe not the appropriate word, but would you say this is kind of the essentials without the frills, bare boning it that you see? Which is maybe some of the board members.
I don't think it's bare boning.
You don't?
I think that we give our kids what they need to play well.
No. I'm talking about what you've given the board to look for. In other words, this is projecting pretty right on the line, no excess, no.
No, this is the big ticket items. Based on my budget that I have right now, this is everything beyond regular equipment purchases that I'm going to need to be functional.
So this keeps us at what we're accustomed to.
This keeps us at what we're accustomed to. Soccer shelters. Okay, we don't have to have soccer shelters, but I mean, I've got rain jackets for football, so I think soccer shelters ought to be appropriate purchase for soccer teams who play out there in freezing weather. but you see what I'm saying? I mean, if baseball's got a batting barn, then I think soccer shelters need to be purchased for the soccer kids. I mean, I think that's the equivalent. In other words, if we're trying to get everybody up to speed, I think these purchases need to be maintained and kept up to speed for everybody to have their best chance to be successful.
And like as an example on this mat replacement for wrestling, Coach Rogers is saying that really doesn't need to be replaced till 2013, but once we do replace it, it'll be good for 5 years, and that's going to be an estimated cost of $9,000. So he only has $1,000 in the wrestling line item budget. So he's just giving you a heads up that 3 years down the road that we're going to be facing a mat replacement. This is every sport.
Headphones. I believe Boucher Club bought the first headphones I had, and I think that the school district bought the second headphones. I know the mat. I believe the Boucher Club purchased the first wrestling mat that I had when we got here, and the school district purchased the second one. So sometimes it's been Booster Club and sometimes it's been the school district. I'm pretty sure the Booster Club bought the last
Well, they didn't. They bought one before that. But I know they bought track mats at different times.
Okay.
So our booster club is pulling their weight and filling in some gaps that we need, but I don't want to depend on them because that's a up and down amount of money. It's dynamic. There's no telling how much they're going to have in there.
How do you think our buses projections is for accommodating our athletic events? I'm just
good.
Asking.
It's good.
Okay.
It's very good.
They run, they're great.
Well, I know that. I'm just
interestingly enough.
Interesting you ask me that.
Interestingly enough, we make
trying to be ugly.
Listen to this statistic. We make 188 trips in the month of February, and we had no breakdowns. Now in March we've had one breakdown, and it was a brand new bus.
I babysat the bus until the bus repairman got there. But they've done well. We've flown great with that. I think that by the time we leave, the times that we leave during the day, and the drivers, I mean our coaches are all the drivers, so we're able to get drivers and depart and return with very little. We can always raise the stipend for coaches that drive. That would be an interesting topic to discuss with y'all, but that's for another day. But as far as the buses, they're doing well. There's no issues with transportation. I think the 14-passenger buses that we're able to use with some of our smaller teams, I think they work well. As far as taking Suburbans on long trips, like to the Texas Relays and things like that, we could always upgrade there to the Suburbans because they've made lots of trips to Austin and San Antonio and long hauls like that. That's a really good way to haul 7 kids. And when we go to track meets, you know, for our elite track students, that's an opportunity. Golf teams can travel in the Suburbans and smaller groups all the time. Tennis at regional and tennis at state can travel in Suburbans. So they work well. Okay. And they burn less gas.
When you said you were looking at more detail, this is just a question, were you talking about in terms of the equipment or in terms of, say, personnel?
No, I was talking in terms of equipment.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I'm looking at just full golf. They only need golf bags.
No. That was out of the ordinary.
Okay.
It's not a 3-year rotation,
okay.
I believe.
Okay.
Golf bags and pullovers and rain suits.
I just want to make sure that when we're looking at it, we're giving you guys what you need.
Yeah, see, our
and that's what I meant.
Budget is
trying to clarify, is there bone in it
right.
or no,
yeah.
it's not. Right.
Yeah, it is.
So the budget on the right that you've got down there is what's paying for stuff in that program right now.
Right.
Sir?
That's what I'm trying to.
The budget on the right is what's the line item budget for them right now.
Okay.
That includes equipment only. That does not include travel. That does not include meals. That does not include anything. That's equipment only.
And the things that you've listed under here under purchase price are upcoming higher dollar ticket items that you're going to need with the corresponding years that you predict you need them.
Those things, in my opinion, generally fall outside the regular annual supplies budget.
Gotcha.
Routine equipment replacement. It's outside of routine equipment replacement and
right.
routine uniform replacement.
Right. Coach Griffin with baseball, he will buy baseballs, bases.
Every year.
Pitching rubbers, little tools to clean out the base hubs, those kind of things every year. We'll buy screens for the L screens, netting and stuff for the L screens every 2 years. Brad Finley builds that. I mean, that's just one of those things that doesn't come out of his normal budget, okay, unless we have money in there that year. Uniforms we'll get every other year.
Just going to make sure baseballs don't go through them, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Piece it up.
Okay.
Good?
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Did you see those new headphones? They have the two cameras and the wire.
All right. Did you hear that? Mr. Bateman wanted to know your headphone version with the conservative version. Remember, this is out of the ordinary version.
Can we put something on an agenda or discussion item in the next, while we're sort of on this, on some, and talk to Jim and give Jim time to run it up? We've got some, probably some preventive maintenance things. As in, Jim can tell me to shut up and go on if he got taken care of, and I just don't know. But there is normally in a large industrial complex or commercial complex, there's a yearly or every 2 years where you take your whole campus down and you do some particular maintenance on certain things. Mostly electrical, some things may be other than that. And I think a few years ago when we had some problems on the ground fault over at the big gym, and we dealt with that for a good period of time, maybe before you got here. And then when you hire a company to come out here and do some work for you, they say, oh my goodness, especially when you have these outdoor equipment room,
right.
Electrical room, where you get all this dirt and all this junk going through it. Is there a maintenance plan that we need to have a long range plan and a budget?
Well, this really sounds like an agenda item, and I bet if you get that request to either I or Dr. Wright, we will make sure it gets on an upcoming agenda with the time to give Mr. Hash to due diligence. Absolutely.
Thank you.
I think excellent.
We've
Steph, I can't accept that request here at the meeting, so you'll keep that mind.
Basic maintenance overview, but I think that's an excellent idea. It's like an amendment to the.
Yeah.
It would be the annual routine maintenance.
Well, he's going to get that request to us,
right.
And we're going to.
Right.
Put, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm American.
Okie dokie.
Thank you, Jim.
We don't like the list of what you're looking for.
All right, discussion and action
items.
The professional employee contracts, teachers, counselors, librarians, and nurses. I thought I did pretty good.
Well, I didn't hear the crack.
You weren't looking.
Oh.
Okay. We're on the professional employee contracts, teachers, counselors, librarians, and nurses.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the professional employee contract for teachers, counselors, librarians, and nurses as presented in closed session.
Thank you, Mr.
Moore. I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. We do have our motion, our second. Do we have further discussion, concerns? No. We will therefore go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously accepted by the board. We will now go to consider approval of the procedures for selling reserve seat tickets for football games for the 2010-2011 and beyond seasons as presented on page 116 of your board packet.
After trying reserve seating this year, I am recommending to you that we continue forward with it and that every year it continues on routinely, not that I come back to you every year with a recommendation, unless there's a change in pricing or something. I'm recommending that we charge $50 again for all five home games. $25 of that is the $5 per game fee, and $5 is the extra for having a reserve ticket, and that we operate under the same system that we did last year. We're both the parents of varsity lettermen and cheerleaders and band are all allowed to buy on the first day. You can look at the procedure outlined there. This would begin the second week of August, and this year the dates would be the 9th and the 10th of August that it would start. But after this year, it will always be the second week of August, and we'll do it at the Ad Building for those first 4 days, and then we'll move it to the high school. Once we got things rolling last year with the band being able to buy in Section B and the football and cheerleaders being able to buy in Section A, and they all got to do it on the first day, then it went fairly smoothly. So We have all the labels on the seats still. The tickets that Coach Rogers had printed last year, I thought were very good. We would go with that same system again this year. So this is my recommendation to you that we go forward with reserve seating, henceforth forward, and the only reason it would come up every year again would be if there was a change in pricing.
Mr. Moore.
I move that we approve the procedure for selling reserve season tickets for football games for 2010 and 11 and beyond.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander. We do have our motion and our second. Further discussion, questions?
I just have one question. Do we have to approve the procedure? We just approve the okay to sell and at the price and let the administration the procedure.
You could do it that way, but since there was some question about whether we were going to take everybody out and start over from scratch or whether we were going to let the people who had their tickets keep them, I thought it was just better to go ahead and put the procedure on there. Because the procedure says that you start over every year with the new varsity and the new band and the new cheerleaders.
Thank you.
The only thing I don't see in the procedure, and I was thinking about this because I don't know if y'all, but I got asked a lot, how we're advertising this and how we're getting this out, just word of mouth.
Put it on the website.
Okay.
And we'll send out a Wingspan, and we'll put it on the athletic website also.
And usually they let
you also sent something home with the players, didn't you?
I sent an information sheet home with the players.
This is probably because it was the first year. So.
But if we send an information sheet home with the players and the band and the cheerleaders, we put it on the AISC website, and we put it on each, like the athletic page and the band page and then the high school page, and then that should cover it. I mean, that should cover it.
Anything else? Nope. We do have a motion and a second. If there's no further questions, we'll go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously accepted by the board. Moving to C, policy update 87, its first reading, affecting local policy DFBB, local, term contracts non-renewal, DFE local, termination of employment resignation, DI local, employee welfare, FB local, equal educational opportunity, FFAC local, wellness and health services, medical treatment, FFH local, student welfare, freedom from discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. These are presented on page 117 of the board packet.
Dr. Ring, there were a couple of sections where it was asking for who our contact person was, and it had you in those places. I'm assuming you still want to be the contact. The only thing I point out is you might change your position from interim superintendent to superintendent.
What page is that on?
299, and I think there's another one that I saw at 314.
You read that?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm the one that
told
you.
Yeah, he just asked me to bring it up.
I think that's an important change.
If you prefer.
Okay, thank you very much.
You going to make a motion? Also,
If I don't have to read the whole thing again, I move we approve policy update 87 at first reading.
With those changes okay.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Bateman. We do have our motion and our second. Questions? Concerns? No, we will therefore go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously accepted by the board. Let us move to consider the approval of the change to PB local, personal, position, substitute, temporary, and part-time positions, first reading, page 357 of the board packet.
This has been in our board policy since 1997, if you notice on the lower left, and it has conflicting information in it. If you look at the documentation, it says that approved substitutes shall have on file in the district the district's application form,
a record of the highest education attained, including high school diploma, GED certificate, or transcript for all college work and or Texas certificates, and income tax withholding form. But then look what it says under qualifications. The district shall attempt to hire certified teachers as substitutes whenever possible. However, no person shall be employed as a substitute who does not have at least a bachelor's degree. And that's never been followed, that we don't employ anyone as a sub who does not have at least a bachelor's degree. So based on what we have in the documentation, number two, it needs to say GED certificate, so that it will match.
Other than consistency of language, do you have any commentary on the substance of the change?
Well, I would, of course, love to have only subs who have bachelor's degrees, but it's not possible. And I did think about putting high school diploma there, but we have a couple of subs that don't have diplomas that are quite good, and so I decided to just leave it the way it was to make it match. I wouldn't, and the principals wouldn't, routinely employ anybody, though, who had a GED only. I mean, that wouldn't be common operating procedure, but this does leave it open for that.
Anything else? Mr. Moore?
I move that we approve the change to DPP local.
First reading.
I will second.
Okay. We do have our motion and our second. Further questions or concerns? No? We will therefore go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously passes on first reading. E, consider approval of the change to EIF local and legal academic achievement graduation first reading, page 358.
Last summer, I brought this to you for the recommended high school program, and stated that the state no longer required health, the state no longer required but one unit of PE, and the state did not require technology applications for graduation on the recommended program. After the State Board of Education met and after the legislature finished meeting, now the state is not requiring health for the minimum, the recommended, or the advanced, nor is the state requiring more than one PE unit or and zero technology applications. But after much consultation with Mr. Butts about this and Mr. Daniel, this is my recommendation to you that Argyle go with the state for the health and go with the state for the PE, but that Argyle continue to require technology applications for each one of these graduation programs, because it's such an important component of a student's ability to acquire work and keep work, and the different kinds of jobs that are being required all require some basic knowledge of BCIS. We're talking about Word, we're talking about PowerPoint, we're talking about Excel spreadsheets. Then also, on the minimum program, the state said that you could take world geography or world history. And then you had an academic elective at another point on your program, and you could take whichever one you didn't take, or you could take a science class. And since we're going to be switching off of tax and tax A and tax M to end of course, and the students are going to have to pass 12 end-of-course exams, or they're going to have an average in each of the core areas on those 12 exams, Mr. Butts and I did not feel that we needed to tell the students on the minimum plan, and we only have 14% of our students on minimum plan, but that they didn't have to take world history or world geography. Since they're going to have to take end-of-course in those, then my recommendation to you is to require the world history and the world geography and the U.S. history, just like we're doing right now. So these are the changes that would go into our board policy, the way they're worded here.
Dr. Cantrell,
yes, ma'am.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the change to EIF local on legal academic equipment graduation first reading.
Thank you, Ms. Alexander.
Second.
Thank you. We do have our motion and our second. Do we have further discussion concerns? No? We will therefore go to vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously accepted by the board. We will now move to consider approval of the $13,529 to Storage Equipment Company for lockers and locks as presented on page 372.
This goes back to Coach Rogers' storage needs at the field house for lockers and locks. He got three bids. This is for Penco Lockers, and the Storage Equipment Company had the best bid, and so I'm recommending to you that we approve, that you approve that amount, and it would come out of capital outlay. Right? Capital outlay.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the $13,529 to Storage Equipment Company for lockers and locks.
Thank you, Ms. Long.
I have a second.
Thank you, Mr. McKellen. Further discussions, questions? No, we will go to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously accepted by the board. We will now go to consider approval of advertising to receive proposals for qualifications from interested firms for district-wide energy efficiency and HVAC upgrades. This is on, well, it doesn't give a page, sorry.
As Mr. Lyles and Mr. Hash and I have looked at what we've done with the energy efficiency and how we've been able to do it, and that was with a lot of help, as many of you know, when Mr. Weaver was on the board. We want to see what else we can still do in order to improve on our energy efficiency. And one of the things that we can still do, you remember from last summer, we had a lighting company come and talk to you, just a report. It wasn't ever an action item, but you had a couple of reports about retrofitting the gym and the intermediate school. And then when you saw the maintenance five-year plan, we had in there a provision for beginning to replace the heating and air conditioning units at the intermediate school over time. We had a staggered replacement plan. And so what I'm asking you to do here is not to make any expenditure, but simply to allow Mr. Lyles would put out the proposal for qualifications from interested firms, and we would look at lighting, and we would look at the possibility of replacing the heating and air conditioning unit at one time without staggering it, as we've previously discussed. Because what we've got going on now, they're turning out to be, they're all about 20 years old right now, but then we've got some that we've replaced, and by the time we finish with this, they'll be about 5 years apart in their age. So we just want to take a look at this and see what it would look like and how much it would cost.
I so move.
Thank you, Mr. Bateman.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Shinsky. We do have our motion and our second. Further questions, concerns, questions? No? We will therefore go to vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously accepted by the board. Our last item. Consider approval of the professional services agreement with GNA Consultants for preparation of amended site plan, page 379.
Last month you approved our going out for proposals for covered walkways and for a building at the stadium. And in order to get that permitted and in order to get that through PNC, the building, I have to have an amended site plan that has the covered walkways on it, that has the building on it, and so GNA has done work for us before, so I'm asking you to approve this agreement. They listed their professional services on page 379, and then it says on here that this will not, their fees would not go over $10,000. Now, there's also some fees for a structural architect that might also be included. So I'm asking for approval of this agreement between GNA and the district.
Mr. Moore?
I move that we approve the professional service agreement with GNA consultant in preparation of amended site.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Long. We do have our motion and second. Further questions or concerns?
I may be naive, but 10 grand in fees?
It probably won't be that much. They're just saying that's the maximum.
For a building and covered walkways?
No, it's not. It's for the amended site plan. They go into their CAD system and they draw all this in and they actually put the elevation and all this kind of detail into it. So that we have to take this to the building. I mean, right now we haven't gotten the price on the building, but the building has to be put through P&Z.
Right.
And so what GNA puts together has all of the drainage system and all of the elevation and those details. It's civil engineering. But it's not just the amended site plan. It's all of the other detail work. And then, like on the covered walkways, it's not as detailed as the building, but it's got like the specifications on there. It's not just dropped in on the CAD system. And then we're also looking at a bridge, like a footbridge that would take the students from the north end of the campus across to the tennis court. This is similar. When we had that band tower added, we had to do an amended site plan for that. But we have to get these covered walkways have to be permitted by the town of Argyle. The covered footbridge, it's not covered, but the footbridge has to be permitted. But the building actually has to go through P&Z.
Okay.
Concerns, however, noted. Any further?
Well, on that, is there, say we go forward and with this and get the plan, is that a commitment to go forth and build the buildings? This is just a plan and it can
but we decided that we need to get these permits before. See, one thing that you're looking at when Mr. Law puts out this request for these qualifications, we need to be able to tell them the professional specifications. And so we're talking about putting a metal building at the stadium. And here's the catch-22. We can't put a metal building there unless we get a variance from the town of Argyle, because they have,
we have a
code that says no metal buildings. But the town has told me and Mr. Hash that we can probably get a variance because the maintenance and transportation building is metal, so we can probably put a metal storage building there. So we're really having to go, before we can put out the specifications, we're having to go through part of this planning and zoning and part of this permitting phase. Do you have any comments to add to that, Mr. Hash?
I believe you did a
good job. Do you have anything to add to that, Mr. Law?
Bob Garlick is also figuring waterways between track fields, between the runway for the football and the sand pit, and between the stadium and the sand pit. They're going to put concrete flumes in there to take the water away from the back of the parking lot so that it lifts the water and half of it goes around one side of the building and half of it goes around the other side. It's going to be a very good way to get rid of the water problem that we already have behind the stands. It'll give an 8-foot sidewalk, so to speak, down beside the water, 377. A 3-foot sidewalk in the middle of two runways and a concrete flume between the stands and the sand pit. Those are the things.
So, Dr. Wright, so in short, we have to have the plans in order to see how much that could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Bob, Darwin said he would also have an approximate cost for us for his own. So I don't know about what it's going to cost before we actually go out.
We know how much, yes, but we know what their fees are. Right. We just don't know how many hours. That's just the maximum.
Okay. Anything else? We do have our motion and our second. Any other discussion? All right. Let's go to the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimously accepted by the board. It is now, this is not right because the clock was not set up. Because mine says 7:39, so I'm guessing it's 8:39 p.m. And
I didn't believe it was before.